Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History, the podcast with a focus on education, technology, and history.
The luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This will have fighting power.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History. I'm your host, Eric Langhorst, and you're listening to podcast episode number 137, and I'm recording this on April 14th, 2008, and I am currently at Tantara Resort, and that's located at Osage Beach, Missouri. My Teacher of the Year travels have taken me to the MASL Conference, that is the Missouri Association of School Librarians Conference, and I gave a presentation earlier this fall at a technology conference in Missouri and talked a little bit about my book blog project that I'm doing with Gorilla Season, and one of the participants that was listening to the presentation is also a member of MASL, and they asked me to come down and thought it was a great fit that I could present my book blog project to the Librarian Association, and it's been a great day today. I've given the presentation twice this morning and I've been able to reach quite a few librarians. So I did record it. It's about an hour long, so I recorded the entire session. So I'm not going to talk too much here at the beginning and let you guys listen. But I do want to tell you ahead of time that I do reference a wiki, and the wiki is on the Speaking of History webpage. So if you go to www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, you'll see a link there for the wiki, and on the wiki you'll also be able to access the video that you'll be able to listen to but not be able to watch, and then I also have the entire presentation available on SlideShare, so you can see it on SlideShare as well. So without too much further ado, here is the presentation that I gave today. It's called Hardtack to Hard Drives, the Gorilla Season Book Blog Project, presented at the MASL Conference on April 14th, 2008 at Tantara. Here we go.
Good morning. I hope that you all are enjoying your conference so far. It's my pleasure today to introduce Eric Langhorst. And he is an eighth grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in the fourth grade, and also teaches a graduate course, did not know that, at Park University, entitled Technology in the Classroom. This year is his 14th year in the classroom, and this past fall he was selected the 2007-2008 Missouri Teacher of the Year. He has presented at regional and national educational technology conference. You know, actually, I think that does deserve a round of applause. Including the National Council of Social Studies and the National Educational Computing Conference. Last year, he published articles in School Library Journal, Educational Leadership, and School and Community, and with articles about projects in USA Today and Edutopia. His other recent honors include the National Cable Leaders in Learning Award, Microsoft Innovative Teacher, DAR, Missouri State History Teacher of the Year, and the Missouri Governor's Humanities Award. I just want to know how you... what you get done in a 24-hour day, how much sleep you require.
I had 2 days since my
goal. I was wondering about that. Please give a warm welcome to Eric Langhorst.
All right, we're going to try the mic thing. Let's see. I don't know if I just speak in the wrong spot, but it doesn't pick up all the time. All right, we'll try that, and if you guys want me to get rid of it, I can get rid of it too, so... did everybody get a handout when you guys came in? Okay. I didn't give you guys a printout of the entire PowerPoint, all kinds of different things like that, but all the information that you'll need is on that sheet. I know when I go from a conference, it goes into a file, and you know I can find it later and stuff. But everything you'll need to know is on the sheet, and on the back is information about the book we'll be discussing today, Gorilla Season by Pat Hughes. And then on the front, I have my contact information down at the bottom if anyone wants to contact me later. And then there's two web addresses on there. The top one is the address for the book blog that we'll be talking about today. And then the bottom one is a wiki. And the wiki has links to all the different things that we're going to discuss today. So I'm going to show you that just real quick so you don't have to frantically be writing down a bunch of addresses or anything like that. All the things that we're going to be talking about, including the presentation. If you want to use this presentation, it's free for you to use. You just click on... where am I at? Oh, yeah, down here. PowerPoint presentation. It's on SlideShare. It's a free way to share
PowerPoint presentation, so you can download it, you can view it, anything you'd like to do. And then all the links, as we talk about them, I'll refer to those. So as long as you get to this website, which is the bottom address, you have access to everything that we'll be talking about today. All right, let me get this off. All right, well, as I mentioned, I do teach at Liberty Public Schools at Southfield Junior High, and I love what I do. I teach eighth grade, so how many people do, well, most of you probably have interaction with junior high students, right? How many people interact with junior high students on a daily basis? Yeah, never the same, always different. I mean, you know, I like what I do because it's always going to be a variety. And then I also teach a graduate course at Park University. And today we're going to talk about how I've used a blog to interact with the book. It's not necessarily a nuts and bolts of how to blog. If I had about another half hour, I could give you guys all a computer, you know, I could get you guys on a blog. So I don't want anybody to walk out of here thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I can't do that. You know, there's all kinds of different applications you can use with this type of project. I've got students every year. In fact, I had we just started my graduate class 4 weeks ago, and out of the 15 people, like six of them, I cannot blog. There's no way. And in a half an hour, they got their blog up, and you know, an hour later, they're putting up pictures of their grandkids and commenting about stuff. So it's not necessarily a nuts and bolts about blogging. I'll get into that a little bit, but. If you have any questions, I can help you later on how to get into that and stuff like that. It's been a very interesting year, able to talk to a lot of different organizations and groups. I've been able to talk to some civic groups that really don't really know a lot of what we do on a daily basis in the classroom. And then I also get to talk to groups of people that are my, you know, prime target audience. Eighth grade history teachers, my eighth grade history teacher came in. Oh, we have more than one? Awesome. Who else is an eighth grade history teacher come in? Somebody else said they were an eighth grade history teacher coming in. Oh, used to be. Okay. All right. My dad is a librarian. His name's Larry. So you can imagine, you know, Larry the librarian. That time. He is 2 years away from retiring as a school librarian in Nebraska. He's in a small town. And he does elementary in the morning and then drives to the high school and does the high school and junior high stuff in the afternoon. And my brother is a third grade teacher in Liberty, but he also has his master's degree in library science. And so eventually he'll move into a librarian position as well. So I'm kind of the odd duckling in the family. I went history and married a history teacher, so but I love librarians. All right, how many people are familiar with the blog? Either blog themselves or read a blog? Okay, all right, so I decided to use a blog as a way to create this space where my students can talk about this book. A couple characteristics of a blog that as we look at it, it'll kind of be important. One is that the events or the articles, the entries are in chronological order. But they're typically in reverse chronological order. So the most current stuff's going to be at the top, then the older stuff gets pushed down to the bottom. And then also the ability to comment to a post. Those two things are going to be important elements of why we decided to use a blog for this project. Well, I first saw an example of a teacher using a blog with a book in 2002. Will Richardson is a well-known educational technology speaker. He was in the classroom in 2002. And he had his students read a book called The Secret Life of Bees, and he decided to have his students blog about it. So they had comments and different discussions. And then towards the end of the project, they emailed the author, and she emailed back a couple-page response and put it on the blog. And so I had read about this, and I'd seen Will present at different conferences. I thought, wow, that's a pretty powerful thing, to be able to have a blog and all these student voices, and then to actually get the author involved. And about that same time, I was trying to find a book that I could use with my curriculum. And I looked, honestly, for about 2 years until I found just the right book, because I wanted a book, number one, that fit in really well with our curriculum. I didn't want to take a book and try and mash it into the curriculum where it didn't fit. And I teach eighth grade American history, so you know, I was looking for something either like Revolutionary War, Civil War, Western Expansion, somewhere around there. But then I also wanted a book that would have a wide appeal to all of my students so that it wasn't just, you know, appealing to my girls or my boys. And then, you know, I didn't want some, you know, big, you know, gun blazing type thing. I wanted it to appeal to everybody. But I also hopefully wanted to find a book that would appeal to adults as well. And we'll find out why that's important in a little bit. And I came across this book that was suggested to me by someone that works in Liberty called Guerrilla Season by Pat Hughes. And I read it in about 3 or 4 days. And it mentions Liberty, Missouri. It mentions Clay County. It mentions the entire western part of Missouri. And it's about two boys growing up in 1863 as the Civil War is starting. Now, one of the characters is Jesse James. And then when I first heard this, I was like, this is going to be hokey. Jesse James is a young boy, all that kind of stuff. But it's very well written, and you don't know it's Jesse James until the end, unless somebody tells you. And his family is based on the actual James family that lived just north of Liberty. And then the other boy's family is a fictional family that kind of takes the more kind of Union approach, where we're more Union supporters than Southern supporters. And it goes through what life was like in Missouri at the beginning of the Civil War. And when I teach the Civil War in Missouri is much different than what my students read in the textbook. It's not about huge armies and Gettysburg and things like that. It's about the daily terror of what happens on your farm when somebody comes up and guerrillas come up and they ask if you're a Union supporter, Southern supporter. Sometimes they're in disguise. You know, people's families were, you know, all the males were killed, or their farm was burned and things like that. The daily terror of that is what our area was like during the Civil War. So I read this book. I emailed the publisher and said, hey, I love this book. Can I contact the author? They gave me Pat's information as far as an email. Emailed her. The next day, she was like, yes, I would love to work with your students and, you know, however you want to incorporate the book. You know, I'd be willing to participate or help or whatever. And so the next step was trying to figure out how I wanted to incorporate it. So I bought a classroom set of books, about 30, through a small district grant that we have, and I had students read it as kind of an extracurricular type thing. It wasn't part of our curriculums. They didn't have enough copies for everybody, but we just kind of did some stuff and talked about it, nothing with a blog, but just kind of read it and had a couple of little projects in class about it. And then through a local spring grant that's available to people in about a 6-county area around Kansas City, I was able to get a $5,000 grant that bought just books. We bought 350 copies of Guerrilla Season, and unfortunately it's not out in paperback yet. Past working with their publisher to make that happen, but they're each about $15, $16 or so. So we got 350 copies, and the building in which I teach, we have about 300 students. So every student was able to get a book, but then we also had 50 additional books to give out to community members, family members, grandparents, things like that. And they could, check them out through the school library, through their child, or through their grandchild. So now, we had 350 copies of the book, but it's physically impossible to get these students together at one time to discuss the book. We wanted everybody to have a voice, and everybody to share the discussion. So we decided to make this a virtual book club by putting it on the blog. And the benefits, of course, are the blog's open 24 hours a day. So if a student wants to comment on Sunday afternoon, they can get on and comment, or if it's, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, or they got study hall 6th period. As long as they can get to the internet, they can comment and they can participate in this book project. So I'm going to show you this really short video. It's like about 3 or 4 minutes long. It kind of gives you an overview, and then we'll get into the project, and I'll show you the nuts and bolts part. Can you guys hear that in the back?
My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri. One aspect of the curriculum that I'd love to teach is the Civil War, a portion of which was actually fought in our own community. Guerrilla Season is an historical novel by Pat Hughes, which describes the early years of the Civil War in Missouri as told through the eyes of two teenage boys, one, a young Jesse James, growing up in Clay County, Missouri in 1863. I wanted to incorporate the novel into our 8th grade American history classes here at South Valley Junior High with over 300 students. We wanted to include everyone, but a traditional book club was physically impossible. So I set up a blog to create a place where discussions about the book could take place 24/7. Over a 4-week time period in October of 2006, we discussed the book on the blog. I moderated all posts and comments. No names were used to protect student identities on the web. The author, Pat Hughes, joined us from her home in Philadelphia, answering student questions each day. Then, a class in California joined us, along with school board members, parents, grandparents, and a college professor in Louisiana. Each week, discussions focused on themes from that particular section of the novel. Opinions were shared, issues debated, and conversations were held with the author. The reading process was not linear this time. It was alive and evolving with the experiences of all those involved. As students began to turn in their final projects for the novel, the blog also became a showcase for their work. Audio interviews with characters, designing fictional movie posters, poems, and alternate endings. Students also learned more about Jesse James, a local historical figure, through videos that we watch from the History Channel and A&E. At the completion of the project, students completed a survey which revealed the success of the project. 93% of the students said that author participation in the blog made reading the book better. 79% of students said that they learned more about Missouri and the Civil War. And 84% of the students said that they wanted more projects using online technology. Since the completion of the book blog project, I've also witnessed an increase in student interest in the Civil War, and students have asked to participate in future blogging projects. Students also had several quotes about the project. Students said that they enjoyed sharing ideas and opinions with the author, and also hearing what other students around the world felt about the same book. Some students also felt that the blog gave them a unique way to be heard. The blog began to attract visitors from around the world. The USA Today featured the project in an article, and I was asked to write an article about the project for School Library Journal magazine. Various teachers have also emailed us with questions so that they can replicate the project in their own schools. This project would not have been possible without the high-speed internet provided by Time Warner, allowing us to post information on the blog and making it accessible to students. Our class also learned more about Jesse James by viewing videos from the History Channel and A&E. We have already made plans with author Pat Hughes to replicate the Gorilla Season book blog project next year, hopefully adding even more participants from various states. Technology in this project did not kill the traditional book, it enhanced it, making the reading experience more dynamic. Hard tack to hard drives, using 21st century tools to teach the American Civil War.
And that was a short video that was made with Photo Story 3, just using digital still pictures, a great program to use if you're trying to put a video together. But the important thing there, kind of towards the end when they had the student comments, you know, we had some students that wouldn't answer questions readily in class, but when they got on the blog, they would, you know, have entire paragraphs and very thoughtful insight to the book. So I think that was a really important part of the thing that attracted students to the project as well. Now, I'm the moderator of the blog as the teacher, and so I'm the one that sets up what the discussion questions are each month or each week. During the month-long project, what I've done is I've divided the book into four parts, and so I'll put a post up saying, okay, this is what we're working on for week one. We want you to read pages 1 through 80, and then I have three or four different discussion questions that the students then comment on. And, you know, I might have links to different things that are included in the book. So, for example, at the beginning of the book, they talk about the raid on Lawrence and Quantrill and stuff. So we'll have a link to an article about Quantrill if a student wants to find out more information about it. We also sometimes have pictures. We do have several items in our local historical museum in Liberty that relate directly to things that are in the book. There's one oath in particular where they have to sign a loyalty oath. We have a loyalty oath in our museum. So we had that picture, and then the students could see an example of it. And some of our students actually went down to the museum because that artifact was in the museum. But basically, I'm kind of the moderator, and I post the things up on the website. So I'm going to show you real quick what the blog looks like, and we'll kind of jump back to the presentation here. The video was talking about the book blog project from 2 years ago in the fall of 2006. We just completed it for this year last week. So the blog that you see on the top of that link there that has the 2008, that's the blog for this year. The blog from last year is still up because we didn't want to, you know, erase it or anything. But the one that has 2008 is the most current one. So this is some stuff that I added actually last Friday. The book blog is a discussion place for the first 4 weeks. And then as we get to the end of the project, the students do a final project, and those get posted up. So if you go to the website today, you'll see some of the examples of what students did at the end of the project. This is one of the book covers that one of my students created for the final project. Then if you scroll down, you'll kind of see what the premise of the blog is. There's, again, final projects. We've got some poems and some alternate endings and things. And I'm going to kind of scroll down here. This is a letter that Pat Hughes kind of wrote to the students to kind of wrap stuff up and kind of thank them for joining her and stuff. Again, this is all chronological, so I'll kind of back up to where the discussions are taking place. And at the bottom of each post, you'll see that there's a little place that says comments. And this is where the student's actually going to click if they want to comment. So let me go down to a discussion question real fast, and then I'll come back up here. All right, so for example, this is in week four, and one of the questions that Pat wanted to ask the students was, what's Clay County like now? So she wrote about what Clay County was like in 1863. You know, what's it like today? What do you see? Are there farms? Is it prairie? And so when you click on the comment button below that post, we have 24 different comments that have been posted to that. And as the post comes up, you'll notice that each one on the top says anonymous. That's because when they come down to the bottom and they have the ability to post, they can use like a, you know, an official like blogger ID and stuff, but we all just want them to post as anonymous. And then at the bottom of their comments, notice they put a pen name. So like here's Chipmunks3, WCA Delaney, the Zoo 08, okay? Some have like, you know, Spider-Man or Batman or whatever, okay? That's because we want to protect their identity online, and so we don't ever have their names up. In fact, the students have participated in different states. I have no idea who they are. You know, I couldn't track them down if I wanted to. The important part is not their name. It's the discussion. So the students that I have, you know, they've signed a little list at the beginning of the project, and it says, you know, Bill Smith's pen name is Batman, you know, and, you know, Susie Anderson is Wonder Woman. And so I know who they are, but the people online don't know who they are. So, for example, you can see Pat, you know, commented on one comment, and Pat actually logs in as herself, and I log in as myself. So when we comment, it says Mr. Langmore, or it says Pat Hughes. But this kind of gives you an example of what the discussion looks like. And again, down here is where you leave your comment. And then on this particular blog, you can just hit anonymous and then publish comment. Now, when you hit publish comment, it's not automatically posted. And this is a really important part of the book blog, because I don't want to live in fear that at 3 o'clock in the morning, one of my 8th graders posted something obscene on the blog. And then I get a phone call and I got to take it down and stuff. The way the blog is set up is I'm the gatekeeper. So I can go into the interface, and when I log in as the moderator of the blog, I'm going to sign in right here, there's a listing of all the new posts, and then I can moderate and decide if I want to publish that post or if I want to cancel it. And if I cancel it, nobody ever sees it. It's never up there. So, for example, I have a bunch of different blogs, so this is kind of, you know, once you get multiple blogs, you'll see different titles and stuff. But if you notice up here, it says Gorilla Season Book Blog, it says one comment needs to be moderated. So if I click on that one comment, it's going to show me the comment so I can look at it. All right, this is an excellent poem. Thanks, Lilo. Okay, so I can decide reject or publish. So if I want to publish it, I hit publish, and now it's up. So one of our big questions at the beginning of the year was, we really added the number of participants. We have 300 students. We have we had a class in Illinois that joined us, and we had a class in California that joined us. And then we got a couple other, like, you know, teachers and professors and stuff. And I was kind of concerned that, are we going to be able to keep up with moderating all the comments? And, you know, as long as you kind of pop in every couple days and check it out, I went through 30 or 40 comments once in about like 15 minutes, because it's really just reading and then deciding, yes, it's going to be published, or no, it's not. So that's really the commenting part or the moderating part. I'll go back to the blog here. And what this allows then is the students to carry on discussions with each other. One aspect of the book they talk about is, for example, when your family might have their home destroyed because you don't support the side of the people that came up and were, you know, checking up on you. So during this book blog project, Pat went down to the Gulf Coast, and she was working on Habitat for Humanity project. And so she brought up the question, number one, you know, if your house was going to be destroyed, or you had like 5 minutes to decide what you're going to save, what would you say? And then the second part was, has this ever happened to you? Well, a lot of the students commented, you know, I take a family photo album, or I take my iPod, or I take my cell phone. Some people were like, I take my wallet so I could buy things that were destroyed, or rebuy. I mean, it was interesting to see what students thought. But then the other neat thing is, we had students from California, just south of San Diego. Their homes were destroyed in the fire. And so some of these students shared experiences. You know, I did have that experience. Somebody came and said, you have to get out in like the next 20 minutes. What are you going to take? And then they talked about, you know, what happened afterwards. So, you know, we had students in California and Liberty, Missouri, and Illinois, and then Pat's on the East Coast. And during this 4-week period, we had our spring break. The class in Illinois had their spring break the week after that. Pat was down in Louisiana for part of it. I was in Dallas during our spring break at in-laws, and the book blog project stayed alive and active because I could moderate comments from my in-laws in Dallas. Pat moderated some comments and made some posts from the Gulf Coast. We had students in different parts of Missouri and the country visiting and stuff, and they were able to comment. So again, it wasn't limited to the physicalness of my classroom. It happened wherever. And I know Pat, you know, I commented some when I was in Washington for a presentation, and I was commenting from the hotel room in Washington. So I mean, wherever you can get internet access, the project can stay alive. So for example, this one, the question about what would you save, it had 178 comments. In total, the four-week project, I added it up last night, we have about 980 comments. So there's a lot of discussion going on between students and between Pat.
How'd you get hooked up with the California school?
Well, I do a podcast, kind of blog type thing called Speaking of History, and I've had it up for about 3 years. I just talk about how I use technology and education. It's kind of some random. The three themes are education, technology, and history. So I've got a following of people that read that. And so like I put a post up saying, hey, we're doing this book club project. Does anybody want to join? And I've done this presentation before at different conferences. And you know, sometimes people will hear about it and go, oh, I want to do that. So just kind of by word of mouth. And I've had people email me after the article saying, hey, we want to, you know, do it with you. And you know, I encourage anybody that wants to. Some people just drop in and don't actually have their students participate. They just drop in to see what it looks like, or you know, things like that. So, again, we use Blogger. You could use WordPress. That's another blogging tool. I've got both of those links on the wiki at the bottom if you want to hit those links. They're both free. So if you can do word processing and you know are willing to spend about 5 minutes to set it up, you can set up a blog. But I've also been intrigued with possibly using a wiki. You know, it's all about just whatever space you want to create virtually and then have people, you know, talking on that space. It doesn't have to be a blog. It could be a wiki or different things like that. We did about 3 or 4 questions each week this year. Next year I might add a couple because we had so many students participating that 3 or 4 questions, we tended to get a lot of comments about, you know, 1 or 2 in particular. So I think we might add a couple more next year to kind of broaden out the questions. But again, they're just questions that Pat and I, you know, bring up as we're going through it. You know, one question that was kind of popular in the one 2 years ago, and we asked it again this year, was what similarities do you see with the guerrilla warfare tactics used in Missouri in 1963 in the war in Iraq? And so we got a lot of comments and different ideas from students about their feelings between what's happening on the news and what Missouri was like. Requirements for students as the project, because this was something that they were required to do in my class since everybody had a copy, was they were supposed to post 2 comments at some point during the entire 4-week period, and then also to do a final project. And I have a list of all their pen names, so I can go in and I can tell, you know, where they commented, but it would take a long time to unpack and find everybody's different comments. So I give them a sheet at the end, and it says, put on there when you posted your 2 comments, and then I can go back and double check. But then I have a sheet that says Billy commented on week 3, similarities between Iraq and Missouri. And then I can go to just that post. And then when I see it, I can check it off. So that's kind of how I manually keep track of all their comments. And then the final project, they have a choice of different things they can do. And I'll show you a list of those in a second. Now the rules for posting, again, no first and last name. So you can't reveal your identity. And we had a homeschool student in Minnesota join us 2 years ago. Her mom makes her listen to my podcast as part of her homeschool, which I don't know if that's good or not. I mean, some of it's probably really boring for her, but you know, sometimes I'll do like museum visits and stuff like that. But she said she wanted to participate, so she bought a copy of the book and she participated. And she used a pen name. She emailed me and just, you know, asked if she could join us, and I said sure. I have no idea who this person is. I mean, if you give me $1 million, you know, I mean, if I emailed her and asked her name, maybe, but I have no idea who it is. She's a homeschool student in Minnesota, but she participated in the project with us. The checking for grammar, this was a huge thing with us, especially this year. I was going to draw the line in the sand this year at the beginning and say, listen, if you don't capitalize stuff and you don't use proper grammar, I'm not going to publish your post. And then, you know, first week, I don't know, students do not believe in the capital letter I. I have no idea. It's no extra work, really. But they just, you know, they're doing all the IM language and stuff. And I don't tolerate the IM stuff. I mean, they're not going to be using, you know, BTW for by the way and all that kind of stuff. But just the grammar stuff on capitalization and periods and stuff, you know, some of them weren't doing. And I had a discussion with Pat on the phone. I'm like, listen, you know, what do we want to do here? Do we want to not publish it, or do we want to just tolerate it? And we discussed it back and forth. And, you know, Pat said, hey, some of the stuff that kids are writing that isn't capitalized and stuff, it's great thoughts and it's a great discussion. They're just, you know, not following conventional pronunciation and stuff or punctuation. And so we went back and forth, but then we finally decided to give in and allow those to be published. So, you know, if you go and you look at our comments, there's a lot of grammatical errors and, you know, kids spelled stuff wrong and everything. But then I guess you as the teacher have to decide, are you gonna, you know, try and enforce the grammatical correctness of it, or do you want the discussion to take place? And, you know, and it's a teachable moment for my students and I, and, you know, I talk to them, hey, this is, you know, being seen by thousands of people, it's a permanent thing. You know, even though you're using a pen name, you know, everybody knows this is, you know, Liberty Public School students, you know, participating, you know, put on your best, you know, foot forward and stuff. So, you know, that's something that, you know, we could discuss for an hour, but that's kind of what we decided on this year. And then we also wanted them to extend the conversation, just like if you've ever been in an online graduate class. You know, you can't just post, I agree with Bill. You know, they want you to somehow, you know, extend that conversation. Yes?
Quick question. I assume do they have to have an email address to be able to make comments?
They don't. You don't have to have an email address. Now,
do they let the students make comments from school, or is that something they can do? Either place, or
yeah. Right. They don't have to have an email address. Our students do, because we give them a school email address, like in fifth grade and stuff. But they don't. They just have to be online, and then they just hit the comment part and just, you know, submit. We do allow, typically like in a week, I might have like part of one period where you go to the computer lab and they can post and stuff. Yeah. So I do give them time in class. So if they don't have any access outside of school, they do have, you know, like two or three different little blocks of time where they can comment. But they can comment during study hall. They can comment before school also. You know, so, I mean, even if you don't have any internet access outside of the school environment, you'll have enough time to be able to at least have two comments. Then I talked about moderating a little bit. Some students did ask the same question. So, you know, we tried to kind of, you know, encourage them to read the posts ahead of time, read it previous to them, so they're not asking the same question of Pat over and over again. We talked about the pen name, identities being kept safe. And I do moderate everything before, so I don't have to worry about the thing being put up. And then this year, we had our students. We had Pat Hughes. She's participated the last 2 years. We had parents and grandparents. I encouraged my students to ask their parents to read the book with them. And I, of course, used the trick of extra credit. I mean, I think we could solve world peace if we just told people they get extra credit if they solve problems or something. So I give them 25 points, which is like nothing. And so then they check out a book for their parent. And then at the end of the project, I give them a sheet, and then it's a sheet for the parent. And it says, you know, they sign it, I read the book with my child. But then this year I also asked them 4 questions to get some feedback. What did you like about the project? What did you not like about the project? And then I asked them about, did you post anything or look at the online content? And from that, I learned that a lot of the students didn't really share the online portion with their parents. They just said, hey, can you read this book with me? And then a couple of the parents at the end were like, I didn't even know there was a blog that went with it. So next year I'm going to have to do more education, you know, getting the parents involved. Maybe have something, you know, an additional thing sent home, or have people come over, you know, at the beginning, maybe for a night or something like that. So that's how the parents get involved. Then we also have grandparents. Last year we had several grandparents read the book with their grandchild, and they lived in a different state. One girl's grandma called her at the end of the book, and the end of the book is kind of a little bit of a cliffhanger. It's not really, it's kind of sad a little bit, because, I mean, it's just not an ideal situation at the end. And some of the kids are mad about the way the book ended. This grandma called up the daughter, or the granddaughter, and she was crying. I can't believe the book ended this way, and all this stuff. We had a lot of neat parent-daughter, parent-son, different things. There was one parent this year that read it during lunches at work with and then came at home and discussed it with his son and stuff. And then a lot of parents said, you know, we used to read to our kid all the time. You know, we used to read bedtime stories all the time, and now we just, you know, we don't. And, you know, it's not sitting down for 10 minutes before bedtime reading a story, but that's pretty powerful when it's supper. You can be like, hey, what'd you think of, you know, chapter 5? Can you believe Matt did that? You know, and you can actually have that discussion. We did have the California students, the Illinois students, a couple of assorted people around the country as well join us. We had a school board president read it 2 years ago with us. This year I got both of my principals to read it with the kids. So, you know, walking down the hall, hey, what do you think of Grills Ethan? You know, the principal's asking a kid in the hallway what they think of the book. So that was pretty neat too. We had special features each week called Pat Asks and then also Ask Pat. So you could directly ask Pat a question, which was really cool. The students would ask questions, why did you name the character this? Or, you know, all kinds of different things that, you know, you can imagine when you're reading a book that you're really into, all the little things that you'd want to know, you know, you can ask the author. And she responds basically that day or the next day to your comment. We also included some podcasts. I do a little bit of podcasting and stuff. So what I did was I called Pat and had a bunch of questions written up and just had her on speakerphone and then used a little portable MP3 player and recorded it as an MP3 file. And it was about 40 minutes long or so. So I chopped it up into 4 parts and then put that on the blog so that students could listen to it. And each week was kind of a different topic. I'll let you listen to a little bit of this one.
Hello, and welcome to podcast number 2 of the Gorilla Season Book Blog Project. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. This is our second interview with Pat Hughes, the author of Gorilla Season. And today we're going to find out a little bit about a mistake that she almost made that she caught before it went to press, a little bit about how she names her characters in her books, and then also a little bit about the writing process that Pat undergoes before she writes a book. So this, again, is with the Gorilla Season Book Blog Project. You can join us online at www.gorillaseason.blogspot.com. And Gorilla Season is spelled GUERRILLASEASON. And again, we're reading this book between the dates of October 23rd and November 19th, 2006.
This is from 2 years ago, the dates.
Also send an email to us at bookblogproject@gmail.com. So here's part 2 of the interview with Pat Hughes, author of Gorilla Season.
Pat, I know that the process of writing a book must be incredibly painstaking as far as making sure that everything is accurate. How do you make sure that everything is accurate in something like an historical novel like Gorilla Season?
Well, you try your hardest, and there's, you know, obviously many safeguards, like I talked to you about double-checking and cross-checking and all the research that goes into it, but there's always something that's going to slip through the cracks. And, you know, at my publisher, we have excellent copy editors, excellent proofreaders. You have so many different people backing you up and checking you. But there's always that opportunity for a mistake. And I'll tell you about the biggest mistake that I almost made and how I caught it. And it was sheer luck. And I'm so glad that I did catch it because it would have been kind of embarrassing. Now, I don't even know how many people these days would have caught it, but I had prairie dogs in Missouri. Because I figured, I mean, I didn't even think to check it because I figured Missouri's got prairie.
Great Plains.
It's got prairie dogs, yeah. Right? So I had, like, prairie dogs popping their heads up and, you know, in the prairie in one scene. And it wasn't until the book was well on its way into production that I happened to be reading Mark Twain's book, Roughing It. And he's talking about going west, and of course Mark Twain is a Missouri boy. And
it's good discussion about
reading Missouri to go.
So we had 4 little podcasts, and again, she talks about different topics and stuff, and that's embedded into the blog, so you can just, like, listen to it right off of the website. All right, so the first 4 weeks are basically discussion, and people are, you know, talking about things, and then as the students get to the end, they have to do 1 of 6 different projects. And this is one project here. They had to redesign the book cover, which is kind of interesting because Pat, when it goes to paperback, she doesn't necessarily like this cover, and so she wants a different cover design. And so for the last 2 years, she's kind of been like getting ideas from my students on what she'd like to do with her book cover. And then she actually kind of has an idea for what she'd like to do. So that's one option. The students can design a book cover. And then as they turn them in, they turn them all in digitally. So they send it to our to a web address. And then I can post those to the blog. So the blog moves from a discussion place to a show place. They can design a new book cover. They can write an alternate ending, which has been really neat because we had some students write some really good alternate endings. Like I said, the students don't like the ending because it's kind of sad and it kind of leaves them hanging a little bit. So some of the students have written alternate endings, and then I posted some of those on the blog already just a couple days ago. And Pat's already commented to the one student in Illinois that wrote an incredible ending. I mean, like, I read it from the email, and I instantly emailed Pat. I'm like, you got to check this out. And this guy and this kid, eighth grader in Illinois, amazing ending. Yeah, the only bad thing is almost all the characters die in some way at the end. And so Pat made a comment on the blog like, hey, this is awesome. You're a great writer. But hey, I got, you know, three more books coming based on these characters, and you killed them all off. So, but I mean, you know, to have an author be able to read alternate endings from kids, I mean, that's a pretty neat thing. They can create a movie poster. Realist Season was made into a movie. They can interview a character, and for this they can either send me the dialogue, like the transcript, or some kids have actually recorded it. They've had two students, and they use Audacity, which is a free program and just a little microphone, and they actually do the audio recording, and then we can put the audio recording on the blog. They can also do a scene as a comic book, and they can also write a poem about the novel. We did have the USA Today do a story about us last fall. And then I wrote the article for School Library Journal, which kind of goes into detail about how we set up the blog and things. And those are both links on the wiki, so if you want to read the article from USA Today or the Dixie Clicks article from School Library Journal, that's available online. And it's a great project for writing for grants. I got mine through a Sprint grant, but it's got a lot of really attractive elements for people that are reviewing grants. I mean, obviously, it's including, you know, reading literacy, whatever the topic of your book is probably going to have some type of curricular content. I know for the Sprint grant, one of their elements was family or community involvement. And so because we were able to purchase extra books and have people read it at home, that was a very attractive part of the grant to them and stuff. So, you know, really the only cost for the project is to get the book in the kids' hands. And we purchase the book and then check it out to them. I know, like, North Kansas City is doing some awesome stuff with their book blog project, and they give their students the book, but they do, like, a different book throughout the year and stuff. This way, you know, with the curriculum content and everything, after this year, we've had, like, 700 students read this book, and I can continue to use it for the next couple years. I mean, the content's not going to change. I mean, it's, you know, Civil War, and we're going to continue to teach the Civil War in my class, so it's something we can use over and over again. Again, the final projects are emailed to me, so it's pretty much a paperless type of assignment. And, you know, I have 350 students emailing me either their, you know, alternate ending or their picture and stuff, and then it makes it easy for me to post directly on the blog. And I don't post all of them on the blog. I get like 80 different book covers, and I couldn't put them all up, so I just kind of do a smattering of different ones. Like I said, you could also use a wiki. One thing that we're looking at for next year, you know, that one comment had 100, or the one post had 174 comments, and it gets a little bit difficult to kind of track who's commenting to who, because it's not like a threaded discussion. It just goes in one linear line, and so, you know, some student might ask a question, and then six questions later, Pat might answer that question, and she'll say, you know, in answering Spider-Man or whatever, but it's kind of hard to follow, and so what I think we're going to try and do next year is keep the blog as like the heart of the project so we can add all that stuff. But then when you click on, you know, discussion number one or whatever, it'll go to a message board. And then you can actually have the threaded discussion where Pat can specifically reply to a question that a student has, and you can, you know, see systematically where the discussion is going and stuff like that. So, you know, we're constantly modifying things and changing things, and I think that's one thing we'll do for next time. So, I mean, if anybody wants to replicate this, I've had, you know, a lot of different teachers from around the country. They're doing different things and different books and stuff. But, you know, it's just one application of technology. I love books. I mean, I love the way books feel and they smell and they look. And, you know, we redid our basement and we had to, you know, add a ton of bookshelves because I like looking at my David McCullough 1776 and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, this didn't kill books. I mean, you know, they went and we had parents check it out from the library. If they did get it from our library, they got it from Mid-Continent Library. You know, but kids still curled up at home on the couch, you know, and read this while they, you know, drank hot chocolate or whatever, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then they could, you know, go online and they could have this whole discussion about things with other students around the country. So does anybody have any questions? Yes?
Their final project, was that completely outside of school time, or did they also work on that during school time?
Kind of a mixture. I mean, there were like little chunks. I mean, I might give them 10 minutes at the end of the class or something if we had some time. But, you know, they knew at the end of the month when the project ended that they would be turning this in. So, I mean, they were kind of gradually working on it as they went through the entire project. You know, I had some students that went home and read the book in like 3 days. But, you know, they knew at the end they were going to turn something in. So, you know, some kind of gradually worked on it.
So did you have lots of other instruction going on at the same time in your class, or?
Well, we did this during the unit where we were talking about the causes of the Civil War. So, I mean, you know, literally, you know, the beginning of the book talks about Quantrill's raid on Lawrence, and, you know, it's all this historical content. So it just was part of how we were talking about what's happening in Missouri at the beginning of the Civil War.
And then students get an actual grade, A, B, C, D, based on their final project and their comments?
Yeah, what they got was... And I debated a lot on if I wanted to give them a test at the end. So what I told them was, you know, reading the book, you're going to have a test, and that's 50 points. And then you're going to get 25 points for making your two comments, and you're going to get 25 points for your final project. And then at the end, you know, I played around with, like, okay, what question am I going to ask them about the book to just basically try and see if they read the book, you know? Do I ask them about, like, what's the name of Matt's brother, or, you know, all that kind of stuff? And, you know, I talked to Pat about it, and I didn't really know if that was going to be a true way of knowing if they read the book or not. So I just honestly told them, hey, you're going to get this sheet of paper with your comments on it, and I want you to say, did you read 80% of the book? Did you read 100%? And, you know, I had quite a few students that said, yeah, I read 75% or 80%. So if they didn't finish, they did tell me they didn't finish. So, you know, again, that's a work in progress, trying to tweak it out. You know, there might be some pluses and minuses, you know, both ways of doing it that way, but they did get the points for actually making the comments, which I can then check, and then doing the final project. Yes?
I can't remember if you mentioned it or not, but I know that Pat actually came and visited right early in the project.
Well, I read the book, and then I emailed Pat, and she was coming out to Missouri to kind of do some research anyway. And so she came to Liberty, and I had her speak to my students. This was like 2003. And so she talked to my students while she was in that day. And then we did the book bar project like 2 years later. So yeah, she did come to Liberty, and she talked to the kids a little bit. And, you know, I know that I've struck the lottery with Pat. I mean, because, you know, Pat's like one of our family friends, literally. I mean, when she came out to Liberty, we took her out to eat, you know, afterwards. And I was in Philadelphia last summer. I did a workshop at the National Constitution Center. So I was in Philadelphia, and I came in a day early, and she picked me up and went out to Washington's Crossing, and we went out to Valley Forge and all kinds of stuff. And like her husband, her son, and myself went to a Phillies game the last night I was there. And I mean, we talk all the time throughout the year. We'll email back and forth and stuff. So, I mean, I know I, like, lucked out huge with Pat, you know. But you can do this project and possibly have different levels of author participation. You know, you might have the author, you know, if you could maybe have the author just send, like, one letter at the end of the project, maybe. Or maybe you could, you know, gather a bunch of questions, and maybe if you could talk the author into possibly having, like, a phone interview at the end and recording it, you know, and then have your students listen to that. You know, so there's a variety of different things you could do. You could do the same thing without the author's participation. I really want to do something, not on this scale, but do some kind of like online discussion type thing about a book about the American Revolutionary War. And the one that I really would like to use is Guns for General Washington, because it talks about a very specific part of what we kind of build the whole Boston lesson around. And it's a very quick read, it's very short, but the author passed away, like, 10 or 15 years ago. So, I mean, obviously the author's not going to be participating, but there's still that participation with, you know, maybe an historical expert about that that we could contact or things like that.
Have you ever thought about adding, or maybe you have, like a podcast or some sort of a video clip of Pat? Because I know if I was reading the book, I'd want to see her.
Yeah. I've thought of that, I've talked to Pat about it. There's an application that's free. It's a Web 2.0 tool called Ustream, if anybody's familiar with that. Basically, Ustream allows you, if you hook up any kind of like webcam to a computer that has an internet connection, you basically have like a live TV channel. In fact, I've had several people, I'm on this thing called Twitter. It's like a mini blogging type thing, and you just post like little things like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And like somebody asked me the other day, when I'm doing this presentation right now, if I could Ustream it so that they could watch it live. And it requires having kind of an extra computer that's running the internet plus a little webcam, $20 webcam, but I didn't have another laptop with me and stuff like that. But that's an application where I could have Pat, you know, as long as she can hook up a $20 webcam just through a USB, have it in her house, and then she can answer questions and stuff. So kind of just baby steps. And
but, next step.
Yeah. But Pat said, hey, I'll, you know, do this as long as you guys want me included and stuff. And I mean, it helps her out too, obviously. I mean, you know, she had a bunch of students in Illinois buy her book and a bunch of students in California buy her book. And she gives me a bad time about I'm her best PR agent and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's happy I'm talking to librarians today in two different sessions about her book. But really, if you have any history teachers that teach about Missouri and the Civil War, this is an excellent book. And adults like it too. And I talked about trying to find a book that kind of reaches different, you know, interests. There is kind of a halfway romantic interest in here. Matt, one of the main boys, kind of likes Susie, which is Jesse's sister and stuff like that. So there's kind of a little bit of romantic element, but, you know, yet there's the whole guerrilla and warfare and stuff. So, I mean, you know, but I mean, I've had tons and tons of adults who read it say, oh, it's really good. You know, they didn't say, oh, you know, I got to read an eighth grade novel thing. But the thing that makes it attractive to adults, I think, is the whole local history thing. You know, they want to know about local history, and I've had so many parents say, I never knew that, you know, the Civil War was like that in our community. And, you know, it's very historically accurate. So it does give them a picture of what the Civil War was like. And it's not Antietam. It's not Gettysburg. It's a lot different.
As you're working through this project, have you worked with your media specialists as far as, like, you said some of the kids go home and read this in 3 days. Have you worked on creating maybe a bibliography for each of your units? That would be, I can think of a lot of titles for the American Revolution.
Additional things for
you? If you like this book, you could also check out.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea. Yeah, I mean, like,
that'd
some
extra
stuff. I do, like, I have a huge counter in my room, and it's just books. And a lot of times being in class, I'll just say, you know, if we're talking about the Civil War, like, hey, I've got this, and, you know, I've got some local history books that I pointed out, but that'd be a good idea to have the actual bibliography right on the page. That's good.
Did you have to sell your district on the idea of blogging, or was that something your district already allowed?
Well, bloggers blocked by our filter in most cases. And in my experiences with using, you know, blogs and things, as long as I go to my administrators and say, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm doing it, and this is, you know, what we're doing it for. Not to say, you know, we want to use this new gadget or toy or whatever and say, this is, you know, I've been very upfront, said, this is my outcome. This is what I want to do, is increase discussion and stuff. They've been extremely supportive, and a lot of that's just according to the climate of your IT people. I mean, you've got some IT people that, you know, my gosh, they don't want to have anything, you know, Web 2.0 allowed through the filter and stuff. And, you know, there's been one or two times when our filter will, like, reset, and then it won't allow blogs. So then I'll just, you know, email the tech people and say, hey, you know, is our blog's not able to get through. Can you open it up? And then they open it up. So we have quite a few teachers that use blogs in some way in class, or, you know, for a class or different things now. So I've been pretty lucky. But I think the main thing is just really outline, you know. And I show them, the students are not going to be putting their face online. They're not going to be putting their, you know, their name online or anything. So once they realize that issue is down, then I think they see it for the value of what it's for.
There's no limit. Like, Blogger is free, and then there's no limit to the number of people that you can
go
through there.
No.
That's pretty.
Yeah, and you can have, I mean, I've been blogging for like 3 or 4 years now. I've got a family blog that's got like 200 pictures on it. I've used 13% of my capacity. And I've literally, like, my Speaking of History blog, I mean, I have 150 podcasts, thousands of pictures. I mean, yeah, so. And I think Blogger's going to be all right, or Google's going to be all right. They're probably not going to go out of business, so. Anybody else? Well, I thank you very much for coming. If you have any questions, you can email me. Thank you.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst, an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. This podcast has a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Show notes, links, videos, and pictures are available at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. Music used in the intro and close is Technotrip, a track by Sounds Abound. You can learn more about their royalty-free music for schools at their website, www.soundzabound.com. Comments or questions about the podcast are always welcome, and you can contact Eric at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please remember, history is so much more than just a bunch of boring old dead guys. Bye.